Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading text 20 from chapter 16 of Canto 4. Chapter entitled Praise of King Pitu by the Professional Reciters. Ayam bhava mandala odayadre. Goptai kaviro naradeva nataha. Asthaya jaitram ratam ata chapaha. Paryasyate dakshinato yatarkaha. Translation. The king, being uniquely powerful and heroic, will have no competitor. He will travel around the globe on his victorious chariot, holding his invincible bow in his hand and appearing exactly like the sun, which rotates in its own orbit from the south. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the word yatarkaha indicates, the last word, yatarkaha indicates that the sun is not fixed but is rotating in its orbit, which is set by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Brahma Samhita. And also in other parts of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that the sun rotates in its own orbit at the rate of 16,000 miles per second. Not miles per hour. 16,000 miles per second. Similarly, Brahma Samhita states, Yasya gyaya pramati samrita kala chakraha. The sun rotates in its own orbit according to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The conclusion is that the sun is not fixed in one place. As far as Prithu Maharaj is concerned, it is indicated that his ruling power would extend all over the world. The Himalaya Mountains, from which the sunrise is first seen, are called Udayala or Udayadri. That's the last word in the first line, Ayam Bhuvo Mandala. Udayadre here. So, from the Himalaya Mountains, because of its height, is the first place where one can see the sunrise. You can see, so, they had this understanding about topography and cosmology. It is stated herein that Prithu Maharaj reigns over the world. It is stated herein that Prithu Maharaj's reign over the world would cover even the Himalaya Mountains and extend to the borders of all oceans and seas. In other words, his reign would cover the entire planet. Now, the previous verse, it spoke of Trayadisha, the Lord of the Three Worlds. but his the planet where he resided, so that he could preside over the three worlds, was this earth planet. Paragraph. Another significant word in this verse is Naradeva, as described in previous verses, the qualified king, be he King Prithu or any other king who rules over the state as an ideal king, should be understood to be God in human form, Naradeva. According to the Vedic culture, the king is honored as the Supreme Personality of Godhead because he represents Narayana, who also gives protection to the citizens. He is therefore Nata, or the proprietor. Naradeva, Nata. Even Sanatan Goswami gave respect to Nawab Hussein Shah as Naradeva, although the Nawab was Mohammedan. A king or governmental head must therefore be so competent to rule over the state that the citizens will worship him as God in the human form. This is the perfectional stage for the head of any government or state. End of purport. Ayambhavo mandalam o dayadreer goptaika viro naradeva nataha asthaya jaitram ratam atha chapaha paryasyate dakshinato yatarkaha. This king, being uniquely powerful and heroic, will have no competitor. He will travel around the globe on his victorious chariot, holding his invincible bow in his hand and appearing exactly like the sun, which rotates in its own orbit from the south. So Srila Prabhupada has chosen to expand his purport by describing cosmology first. So I'll spend a little time with cosmology. It's Krishna's kind arrangement. When Sadaputta Prabhu left his body, I was feeling great loss because I felt very close to Sadaputta. In fact, I have spent hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours of expanding the pearls of wisdom that he presented, because as far as I'm concerned, he was a genius. As far as I'm concerned, I've not met a more brilliant person in my life, including all of the so-called professors that I had in college, compared to Sadaputta. So I thought, let me try to serve Sadaputta a little bit further in his absence. I thought I would want to dedicate some time this coming year to further expand the revelations that he gave, because he was so dedicated to Prabhupada's mission. Although his education was, he was a mathematician. He was a PhD, Dr. Richard Thompson, but PhD in mathematics. So I can't even imagine being a doctor in mathematics and having the assignment from Srila Prabhupada to understand, study and understand the Srimad Bhagavatam and then design a planetarium. I mean, I've never been to a planetarium. What to speak of design one? What to speak of design it from the Srimad Bhagavatam? But the last thing that Sariputta did to assist the temple of Vedic planetarium was that he drew a paper. So he, you know, the text is there. At the request of the committee dealing with the planetarium portion of the new temple in Mayapur, to describe in words what that planetarium would look like. And his next assignment, having submitted that 25-page paper, what the planetarium, you know, physically what it would look like, what would be inside the planetarium, he was then to create a 3D video animation tour of, like, you know, what was in his brain and show it visually so the architect could make the plan to match his brain. Then the architect could say, oh, now I understand what you wrote, but that might be difficult. And so then he could adjust the plan according, you know, this dialogue with the architect by 3D video animation. That was the level of brilliance of Sariputta. And he's gone. But some of his work is there. Fortunately, he was very prolific in his writing. And one of the things that he presented, well, was the Mysteries of the Sacred Universe, which was a 3D DVD where he was explaining the fruit of his, whatever, 15 years of study, the fifth canto, Bhagavatam and Mahabharata and Vishnu Purana and other literatures, showing that there's four models of the structure of the universe. I'm going into this just to dovetail my desire to appreciate Sariputta and share my appreciation with you, but also connect with what Prabhupada is writing here. So, Western astronomers, you know, it was before Copernicus, a little history, before Copernicus, there were models of cosmology that spoke about a geocentric structure. Geocentric means the earth is at the center and things move around the earth. Copernicus had this brilliant revelation. Things don't move around the earth. Things move around the sun. So it became a heliocentric model of the universe instead of a geocentric model of the universe. I hope you can listen attentively, because I'm going to even get up to the board and make some drawings. You know, this is science class this morning. Based upon the Vedic model. So not only the idea that the sun is at the center and everything moves around the sun, but Copernicus gave distances and diameters of the sun, distances between the earth and the sun. So it was revolutionary, you know, to science at the time. That heliocentric model has prevailed. But I'm going to demonstrate to you very quickly that it doesn't matter. Or say it differently. The geocentric model of the Vedas is perfectly fine, because the purpose is to describe what's going on in the heavenly bodies, the planets moving around in space. And because Sariputta was a mathematician, he actually went to the trouble of calculating out everything that the Vedic model shows and everything that the modern heliocentric model shows, and guess what? The numbers match 1 to 1. So we'll start with the sun. With the Copernicus model, The sun doesn't move. But the sun moves. Even in Western astronomy, the sun moves. So, first I'll just use my hands, you gotta watch. Here's the Earth planet, right here. And the Earth planet is spinning on an axis, right? It's like 23 and a half degrees or something like that, axis. So it's on a tilt, and it spins. And since it's spinning, if you look at it from the top, it's spinning counterclockwise because the sun rises in the east. So if you look at the Earth planet down, from top down, it's spinning counterclockwise and the sun is rising in the east and setting in the west. Yes? So based upon that motion of the Earth planet spinning, counterclockwise, the sun rises east to west. But we also know that there are seasons where the sun is moving, not only the earth is spinning on its axis, but the sun is also moving. Because what's Makara Sankranti? It marks when Bhishma Dev left his body. What was significant about Bhishma Dev leaving his body at Makara Sankranti? January, what's the date? 14th. So January 14th is the date when the sun starts to move in a northerly direction. Yes? And that's when, according to Bhagavad Gita, or the science that yogis follow, when the soul leaves the body, as the sun is moving in the northerly direction, then the soul will go upwards. And so January 14th, Makara Sankranti, that's when Bhishma Dev left his body. It's described right in the Bhagavatam. So what does this mean? The sun moves in a northerly direction. Excuse me, I'm going to step to the board here. It's called, the word is called ecliptic. I'll just do it in words first. There's a point during the mid-year when the days and nights are equal. Oh, when the sun, for those in the northern hemisphere, like in India, for those in the northern hemisphere, when the sun is at the bottom, the nights are longest and the days are shortest. Then the sun moves where the days and nights are equal. It's called the equinox. And then the sun keeps moving in a northerly direction. And it reaches its zenith where the nights are shortest and the days are longest for those in the northern hemisphere. And it's a summer solstice. And then the sun keeps moving, now in a southerly direction where its days and nights are of equal duration. Another equinox. And it keeps moving down, 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 down till it comes to the winter solstice where the days are shortest and nights are longest. That path has a name. The orbit of the sun, as the sun is moving around the earth. It's relative motion, but it's the sun is moving around the earth. So, ecliptic is the term. Ecliptic. So, that's the movement of the sun around the earth. Now, maybe I won't have to go to the board. Here's the earth, and the earth has a moon, one moon, moving around the earth. And, I'll do it. This is the sun. The green one is the earth. Earth is moving around the sun, according to Copernicus at least. Earth is moving around the sun. Now, listen carefully to the question. If you were to map the movement of the moon that moves around the Earth as the Earth is moving around the sun, what would that map of the moon look like? Spiral. It would look like this. Etc. Yes? And you just keep doing that many, 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 so many times. And what are you going to get? It becomes a disk. Yes? A disk that has an inner dimension and an outer dimension, or from the sun a radius and a further radius. Yes? A disk. Now listen carefully. If this is the Earth, and this is the movement of the sun on its ecliptic, as the sun in 1 year moves one complete cycle, the sun is moving around the Earth on its ecliptic path, and you were to map the movement of Mars as Mars moves around the sun, as the sun moves around the Earth, what are you going to get? A spiral. They call it a spirograph. They got a name for it. And you keep doing it many, 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 many times, and you get a disk with an outer dimension and an inner dimension. Okay, now we're going to map Jupiter, and we're going to map Saturn, and we're going to map the visible planets. And we get a series of rings with an inner dimension and outer dimension and some distance in between, and some inner dimension and outer dimension and some distance in between. Yes? According to the mathematical calculations that Sataputta has done, the end result is you get a map of our solar system with the Earth at the center, geocentric, model of where the planets are in relation to the Earth at any given time you can calculate, because if you have the Vedic cosmology and you combine that with astronomy, meaning, you know, at a particular point in time, you give the time where the sun is, you can determine where the sun is based on time. Based on the time where the sun is, you can determine where the planets are, and you can calculate where any planet is going to be. Then you take that science, and you have, you can be an astrologer at any time based on where you are on the Earth planet. You can know where all the other planets are, and you can do astrology. Yes? Yes. So it was very practical. Astrology was very important for, let's say, agricultural-based economy. So the farmers could go to the astrologer and say, what kind of a growing season are we going to have this year? When should I plant my crops? Will there be excessive rain based upon, you know, what's going to happen? What are the astrological influences? Or are you going to begin some activity? When is an appropriate time for marriage and for some ceremony, some function? It was very useful in Vedic culture. It was based upon this. And Sataputta, bless his heart, went through all the difficulty of taking the numbers that are found in Srimad Bhagavatam, how many yojanas between Jambudvip. Jambudvip is a mountain, a golden mountain, in the middle of this central ring. Sumeru is the mountain. It's the axis. It's the axis of the universe in one of the models. And so from the axis of the universe, the movements of the sun is determined, and the movements of planets around the sun are determined. And then you can determine the cosmology of our solar system, numerically quantified, before there was even technology. I'm going to sit down again. Through technology, well, first Copernicus, in addition to saying the universe is heliocentric, he gave a number. What's the distance between the Earth and the Sun? Well, it wasn't a very accurate number. It was off by a factor of something like 93. 93 times off from what the real distance is, from what the Vedas say the distance is. So then telescopes became more sophisticated, and, you know, over time it became closer and closer and closer. And then they made these really super-duper telescopes, Hubble telescopes, and mounted it on spaceships and sent it off into space and take pictures of distance, and they can measure distances and refractive index of light coming from stars that are moving, and then figure out, you know, now they have a number that matches the Vedic number, 93 million miles. My dear devotees, before there were even telescopes, the number found in the Vedas was the right number. And now they're coming closer to that right number through technology. But there was no technology. So how did they know this? The answer is through descending knowledge. Not through their senses or their power of reason, pratyaksha and anuman, but through shabda. They knew. They knew. Just like, you know, the sun is stationary or the sun is moving. The sun is moving. How did they know? Through shabda. How fast is the sun moving? 16,000 miles per second. The sun is moving. And then you can calculate, you know, the distance between, you can do the math. You know, just, you know, be a little geometry. There's the earth. There's the sun. There's the distance between the earth and the sun. The sun makes its orbit one complete revolution in 1 year. How fast does the sun have to move? You can do the math. And that's the math. They knew that before they had any technology, how fast the sun is moving. How did they know that? Shabda, through descending knowledge. Here's one of the reasons why Srila Prabhupada wanted a planetarium in Mayapur. Several reasons. One is so people will come and see it. Like, wow. Thousands and thousands of people will come to see, you know, like they go to Disneyland. When people come to America from India, there's three things they want to see. At least two things. They want to see Disneyland, they want to see Niagara Falls. And a number of pious Indians, they want to see New Vrindavan. Palace of Gold, they've heard about the Palace of Gold. They want to go there. So many, many people from all over the world will go to see a planetarium based upon the ancient Vedas that in three dimensions, in high technology, will show, just like a chandelier, suspended from the ceiling of one of the domes, will be the universe. With the pole star being the center point from which the planets are moving, and they'll move at a pace relative to the other planets, moving, rotating around, circumambulating the pole star, because the pole star is Svetadvip. It's the abode of the Supreme Lord, and everyone's there circumambulating the Supreme Lord, offering their respects. And then as the planetarium It will have several stories. As you go to different stories or levels around the perimeter of that dome, you'll be able to see where Swargaloka, you know, the different planetary regions, and look out horizontal, and there's Swargaloka. And you go around the outside of the dome, and it'll give information from the Vedas of how Swargaloka is set up. And then Janaloka, Tapaloka, Maharloka, Brahmaloka, the pole star. And then, you know, beyond is Vaikuntha. And beyond Vaikuntha is Goloka. Just like Brahma Samhita describes. Mahesh Dham, Hari Dham, and Goloka Dham. Just exactly according to the statements of the scriptures, a three-dimensional representation. That mathematically was in place before there was even technology. Mathematically matching what modern science says, one to one. So what the import, the second reason that Prabhupada wanted this so much, is it then says, for those people who go, ha ha ha, look at this silly literature that has all this mythology. What intellectual person worth his salt is going to pay any attention to this mythology? Well, my dear sir, this very same body of literature that describes quantifiable, empirically quantifiable information of the structure of the universe down to the exact number. Why would such persons include in their body of literature mythology, something that a poet just like made up? A bunch of stories. That's just silly. You follow? It adds great weight and strength to not only accepting the empiric information, those things that you can't measure, accepting them also on the same basis. It should be accepted. For the faithful, it's accepted. For those who are so much influenced by science, Prabhupada confided confidentially to some of his leading devotees, for a preacher of Krishna consciousness, one of the greatest obstacles, there's a few of them, but one of the greatest obstacles is the blind faith that people have in science. In other words, we'll say it backwards. Because modern science numbers agree with the Vedic numbers, we can accept the Vedic numbers. Not the other way around. Because there's blind faith in science. So that blind faith in science says, we will make you immortal. And the Vedas say, never. Prabhupada was told, I don't know if it's true, but Walt Disney, you've all heard of Walt Disney, he was such a fool that when he made an arrangement in his will that when he would die, his body would be frozen, put into a chamber, so that when they figured out how to make immortality, they could take his body out, thaw it out, and he could be immortal. And people pay money to have that, oh, Walt Disney did it, I should do it too, here's a bunch of money. You can freeze my body and put it in an ice box, and when they figure out immortality, you can thaw me out. It's real. They have such faith in science. Blind faith in science. Prabhupada wanted to challenge it, confront it. And this is one of the confrontation ones. That is, without technology, you got the message. Very, very sophisticated. I'll give one other one. Another one is, Maharaj Parikshit, hearing Shukadev Goswami in the fifth canto describe Vedic cosmology, he says, I have a doubt, because in one place it describes that the planets in relation, the earth in relation to the sun is moving clockwise, and in some other place it says counterclockwise. That's a contradiction, yes? So could you explain the contradiction? And the contradiction explanation that Shukadeva Goswami gives sounds like childish, but it's not. It's very brilliant. He gives the example of a potter's wheel that's moving clockwise. And on the potter's wheel, there's some ants that are moving counterclockwise. And that's his answer. So similarly, there's both clockwise and counterclockwise motion. I'm going to go to the board again.
So,
here's a potter's wheel, and it's moving clockwise, spinning, zoom, zoom, zoom. So, clockwise is the motion of the earth as it's spinning on its axis very fast. But on the potter's wheel, there's little ants that are moving in this direction. That's the following the path of the sun as it's moving very slowly, and the planets that are moving in relation to the sun very slowly in relation to the earth. They're moving counterclockwise. So simultaneously, there's a clockwise motion and a counterclockwise. So the ants that are on the potter's wheel, they're moving zoom, 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 zoom. But they're also moving slowly this way. Got it? This evening, I'll show you a little video clip from Sataputta's work where he's done a video animation of this. And it's a sophisticated description of relative motion that Einstein let us know there's the sun. Relative motion. But the Vedas knew long before Einstein was born. In a cosmic scale. So back to the text 20, Srimad Bhagavatam. The yes yagya ya brahmati samrita kala chakro. According to Brahma Samhita, this is the realization of Lord Brahma, the planets are moving and the sun is moving according to the order of the Supreme Lord. The sun is not stationary, the sun is moving. So the heliocentric model is not denied by the Vedic wisdom, but it's a practical way of, you make your calculations from the point of observation. The sun, when you're standing here in Hyderabad, and from Hyderabad the sun is moving, and the planets are moving around the sun, and so you make your astronomical calculations according to the point of observation. The equations are different, but the math ends up the same. As if it's from the point of the sun that you make the calculation where the planets are. It's a different set of formulas, and you plug the numbers in, you calculate them all out, and you get the same numbers, the distances between planets and where the planets are at any given time. The heliocentric model and the geocentric model both work because of this relative motion. It's just a point of perception, or the point of observation, I mean to say. And they're all moving according to the order of the Supreme Lord. So Prithu Maharaj is being compared to the Supreme Lord by whose order the sun is moving. And just as the sun is moving, so Prithu will move about the earth with his bow in hand. I remove the verse. Asthaya jaitram ratam Ata Chapaha, with his invincible bow and arrows in hand, moving on his Ratha, he will move about the surface of the earth, giving strength and protection to all as the king. Viraha, very powerful. Goptaika Viraha, uniquely, Eka Viraha, uniquely powerful. He'll give protection. This is Prithu Maharaj. When we go to Mayapur for the Mayapur Yatra, we'll visit a place where Prithu Maharaj visited. You know, when Prithu Maharaj became king, the earth was not producing because there was a nasty king before him who stopped all Brahminical activities. And so Mother Earth reduced her supply. So Prithu became king and he confronted Mother Earth. You start supplying. She said, but my dear Prithu Maharaj, I stopped supplying because this nasty king. I'll supply. Because you are virtuous. Now there's reason to supply. So Earth restricts or extends supply according to the qualities of people on Earth, and particularly the qualities of the leaders. Supply or reduce the supply. So what he did was, they were to increase the area of agricultural land, he sent his men, his soldiers, to go level some of the mountainous regions so that there would be more agricultural land. And when they came to some place in Mayapur, we'll go to that place, they saw that there were some mountains, and they started to level the mountains, and fire came out of the land as they were trying to level the mountains. So they reported this to Prithu. He told them, stop. I don't know what this means, but stop. So then he personally came, and it was disclosed to him that this is the very place, sacred place, where the personality of Godhead in his form of Gauranga Mahaprabhu would appear. And so he made a ghat, very humbly named after him, Prithu Ghat. And then later one king, King Balal Sain, expanded it and named it after himself, Balal Digi. And so we'll see that place when we go to Mayapur. So his concern was protection, providing. He was comfortable, but there were many citizens that didn't have the necessities, so he made the arrangements that they would have necessities because he was such a qualified king. And therefore also we find this term Naradeva, God in human form. That's if he's qualified. And Prabhupada quotes from Chaitanya Charitamrita where Nawab Hussein Shah was inquiring from Sanatan Goswami, you're a very learned person and a great Vaishnava, and there's some individual who has come to my kingdom, and he's very young. And although he's very young, there's hundreds of thousands of people who are following him. Can you tell me who this person is? Sanatana Goswami said, you are a Naradeva. You are representative of God. You are omniscient like God. Certainly you know. You don't need to ask me. And because he was very intelligent in certain ways, Nawab Hussein Shah, he said, I can understand. He's not just a saint. He's a manifestation of the personality of Godhead. Wherever he goes, he should be given all facility and protection. Sanatana Goswami was pleased by his understanding, But he also knew that this is a man not to be trusted. He could change like Kamsa, you know, just boom. Here's your child back. No, give me the child. Let me kill it. So he advised Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, for your own well-being, I don't recommend that you stay here. Because Nawab Hussein Shah Naradeva could do anything. That's Vedic culture. And when one is truly qualified, in fact, they do nothing but represent the will of the Supreme Lord, the message of the Supreme Lord. They rule according to the indications of the Supreme Lord in his laws of mankind. Therefore, Naradeva. And Prithu is of such quality. Okay, I'm past my time. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yes?
Hare Krishna.
You just mentioned about even the time and the cosmology and the astronomy part of it. I wanted to be clear with this aspect when it's been said that the sun god, when he rides on his chariot, and the wheel and the spokes, they represent the seasons.
Yes.
So is it any relation that Sadaput Prabhu has also put this into that?
Yes. It's not metaphorical. It's not to say that, you know, there's this axis that's a certain number of certain distance above Bhumandala. It's not mythological. It requires a certain depth of understanding what it means, but it's very clear when you understand what it means. It's, you know, when you understand what it means and hear the description, it's very clear. The language is, how to say this properly. The language is presented in such a way that upstart whippersnappers can't understand what it means. You know, mental speculators can't understand what it means. So they take it as mythological. But impacted within that language is precise measurements of what's going on in the Vedic cosmology. We can cover that. Maybe I'll spend some time with mysteries of the sacred universe tonight. Stay tuned for coming attractions.
Maharaj, according to this description, the seasons are very much related to the position of the sun.
Sun, yes.
And how do we understand the statement of the Bhagavatam that in Kali Yuga, as Kali Yuga progresses, the seasons are disturbed, that the order of the seasons get disturbed. And, you know, there's a disturbance, the time when it's supposed to rain, it doesn't rain. You know, that they're all a mixture of seasons.
Well, it's just like health of the body. There's a natural arrangement, and then there's if people live an unhealthy lifestyle, it's disturbed. The natural arrangement gets discombobulated. It gets disturbed. So there's a natural arrangement, but due to the vicious activities of people in Kali Yuga, incredibly terrible, sinful activities, that which is natural becomes disturbed, including the seasons. You know, the impact of all the effects of the planets and all the effects of... So you could describe it astronomically. Things become disturbed. You know, the influence of planets disturbs things. But it's the influence of planets is because of the sinful activities of the people. And that can all be adjusted. It's just the influence of this age. Things become irregular. Then, you know, there's a self, like with the body, there's a self-healing mechanism that's built to repair things that break down. At a certain point, it dies because it doesn't function anymore because of age. The time factors, there's multiple factors acting. So Prabhupada's expression was that if persons of this age, even as the age of Kali, if they act according to the Yuga Dharma, It can change and regularize things once again. So piety and impiety affects. Even the sun is there and the planets are there. Like this question of, you know, if you engage in devotional service, can it change your karma? Yes. It can change the irregularity of seasons. But back to the, primarily seasons are dependent upon, you know, regularity of seasons are dependent upon the position of the sun. But there's other factors according to the position of sun, is the planets. And how those planets act upon the individual is also karmana daive netrena. It's decided by the presiding personalities and their influences upon our lives. We're not independent, we're dependent. Although we like to think otherwise. Sumeru Mountain has passed through Earth. We are not able to see it. Is it because it is made up of different materials invisible to our eyes? Okay. One can see that Mount Sumeru in the heavenly regions, but we're not there. So ask me this question this evening, because it'll take some explanation that would take too long to get the message through. According to the presentation Sadaputta has made, there's simultaneously different models, within the Vedic cosmology. Some being the model of the universe, some being the model of our solar system, some being the vertical dimension of the planets as they're situated from lower to higher regions, some a topography map of Central Asia. Stay tuned this evening. Ask the question later. Yes. I can't hear you.
Scientists don't have.
I can hear you. Go ahead.
Scientists don't have faith on scriptures.
Scientists don't have faith on scriptures.
But how, with the imperfect senses, how they understand this?
How they do what? Imperfect senses can't understand it. You're right. Then they rely upon their imperfect senses, and so they have no faith in the Vedic system. The Vedic system can't be understood by imperfect senses. We can use our senses and we can use our mind to help get some understanding, but it ultimately has to be disclosed. That's why we need such elevated persons like Sadaputta to disclose. It's there. But we can't see it. You ever had that happen? It's one of the defects of the conditioned soul. Like, you know, supposing you lose your keys. You're looking around your room. I know I have my keys. I can't find them. Turn everything upside down. I can't find them. Somebody else comes in the room and says, there they are, right there. Oh, I didn't even see them. They're right there, yeah. Or an example that Prabhupada gives. I heard it so many times. A mechanic. You're riding along in your car. Zoom, zoom, zoom. The car stops. Oh. You open up the hood of the car and look inside. I don't know. You bring a mechanic. Prabhupada says. He touches something. Zoom, zoom, zoom. It starts. Because he's trained. He can see. Right away he knows the problem. Right away he touches this wire and that wire. Zoom, zoom. It starts. Same object. One can see something, another can't see something. By training, by qualification, then one can go to the fifth canto and see things that other people can't see. It is designed that way. Unqualified people are those that rely upon their senses and power of speculation. See you later. Don't bother reading this because you won't understand it. But those who are devotional can disclose it. And Prabhupada wanted that his Bhaktivedanta Institute would disclose it. The assignment was given, but it was like, you know, climbing Mount Everest. We'll do it later. And no one did it later, so he did it. You know, he's a mathematician, but he took it seriously. Anyway, it's by devotion that one can understand these things. There's a nice article that Hari Sori Prabhu wrote upon the departure of Sadaputta, describing, you know, this chronology. When Prabhupada first wanted, said he wanted the Vedic planetarium, he requested the devotees to travel in South India, find those learned persons that know. And then they brought one. And within 10 minutes, Prabhupada, after questioning the person, got him to admit, I don't know. But he's, you know, like one of the foremost authorities in that which he doesn't know. So he wanted his own. So there are now, Dhanavir Maharaj found a couple from the Sri Sampradaya and Madhva Sampradaya that are very knowledgeable, very excited that ISKCON is taking this up. Because, you know, for generations they've been handing this knowledge down, preserving it very carefully. There's not a lot of people that want to know about, you know, the structure of the universe according to the Vedas. They want to, you know, what's going to make some money. And that there's going to be a planetarium that's going to show the structure of the universe. They're excited. They're going to have their opinion too. You know, likely what's going to end up is not going to be with this scholar or that scholar. Everything that they say is what's going to be in that planetarium. There's different, you know how scholars are. There are different views on things. But they're spending an enormous amount of energy and time to come up with a cohesive model. It's very exciting. It's gonna rock the world. It's gonna put the intellectuals in a real defensive mode. And we'll have a very strong footing to challenge them. It's exactly what Prabhupada wanted. And then they'll get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because they'll have to come to Sridhar Mayapur to see it. Hari Bol. Right next door is the big kirtan. The kirtan hall is going to be 1 acre big. You have hectares here, but an acre of land is the inside of the temple room floor of the main temple. And then there's balconies up above in case everybody doesn't fit. And then right next door is the Temple of Vedic Planetarium. It's going to be awesome. Okay, I'm going to end. Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada.